This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Janaea Williams in for Steve Chiatakis. Made in the USA. When you see that label on clothing, there's a good chance it was sewn at a factory right here in Los Angeles. Like this one, called 9B Apparel in Huntington Park. Under the glow of fluorescent lights, workers sit at rows of sewing tables next to a towering shelf stacked with reams of colorful fabric. Francisco Martinez Mejia is stitching seams onto denim jackets. He's worked here for about a decade.
Right now, it's around 500 jackets. So when I finish, I have to make the other thing. Different steps.
Garment manufacturing is skilled labor that requires speed, precision, and knowledge of industrial machinery. But that isn't always reflected in workers' pay. 9B Apparel pays its employees at least minimum wage, but many LA garment workers make far less. Local organizers have spent years trying to change that, and now a new California law called the Garment Worker Protection Act seems like it's making a difference. It's also inspired a push to expand protections to garment workers across the U.S. Reporter Zoe Matthew has the story.
Paying really low wages has been part of the culture of clothing manufacturing for a long time. Marissa Nuncio, director of the nonprofit Garment Worker Center, says this is because factories have historically paid workers using a piece rate system.
So instead of getting paid hourly, they were getting paid per piece, per sewing operation or per trimming operation, per pressing operation. And those piece rates could be as low as 2 cents, 1 cent, 5 cents, just depending on the operation.
With rates this low, workers simply can't work fast enough to earn more than a few dollars per hour. And if you're wondering how this is legal, well, it isn't. The Federal Fair Labor Standards Act requires that all employees earn at least the hourly minimum wage. And if a worker's piece rate wages don't add up to that, owners are supposed to make up the difference. But Nuncio says lax oversight, combined with the lack of accountability along the supply chain, has made it easy for factories to get away with this wage theft. Especially because a lot of the workers are women and immigrants and might face retaliation from bosses.
It's a very unfortunate reality that we have a very broken immigration system that allows there to be this sort of second class kind of citizenry created. And employers will use that to exploit folks.
Garment Worker Center members have been trying to abolish the piece rate system for years, and in 2021, they achieved a major victory here in California with the passage of Senate Bill 62, also known as the Garment Worker Protection Act. Victor Naro, project director for the UCLA Labor Center, breaks it down.
SB 62 does two things. One is a better system of joint liability so that retailers, manufacturers, different brands can be held accountable for any of the labor violations that takes place at the contracting level. And so it improves that system of joint liability. But more the other important provision is eliminates the piece rate. It eliminates it completely. It says that you have to pay them hourly. You have to comply with the minimum wage.
Naro says increased liability should motivate brands to pay manufacturers more so employees don't get shortchanged. While the law has only been in effect since January 1st, some workers are already reporting increases to their take-home pay.
We're hearing that workers are finding work where the minimum wage is being paid now, which just wasn't the common thing prior to SB 62. If you went and found a new job, you were almost always paid on a piece rate. So workers are telling us, I moved to a new job and they're paying the minimum wage there. And we have also had members come to say, my factory switched over from piece rate to minimum wage.
One of those workers is Virgilda Romero. Romero moved to Los Angeles from Guatemala 22 years ago and found a job working as a garment trimmer in a factory that paid a piece rate.
Cuando muy empecé a trabajar en la costura, ganaba 150 a la semana porque me pagaban a 3 centavos y 4 centavos y era muy poquito.
When I first started working in sewing, I made $150 per week because they were paying me 3 or 4 cents per piece. It was too little, she says. Romero says her next job also paid below minimum wage. She eventually found her way to the Garment Workers Center and began organizing with other workers to pass SB 62. Now, she has a new job that pays more than twice her previous wages.
Y ahora que pasó la ley SB 62, yo a la vez me siento muy contenta porque la verdad ahorita yo estoy trabajando por hora.
Since SB 62 passed, I feel very happy, she says, because I'm working for hourly pay from 8:30 to 5 p.m. They give me $600 per week. Of course, that's still hard to live on.
La renta están caras. Los biles. Entonces, como que si da igual, casi no nos alcanza tanto el dinero, pero...
The rent is so expensive, she says. The bills... So it pretty much feels like I'm making the same. The money doesn't go far, but many people are still earning $250 to $300 a week because many factories are still paying by the piece. On the industry side of things, reactions to SB 62 have been mixed. Ilsa Metrick, president of the California Fashion Association, says that while she doesn't support factories paying below minimum wage, she thinks the new law will scare more manufacturers out of the state. And she doesn't believe underground factories will suddenly start obeying the law.
What makes them think that this will change anything for the people who choose to do it in an illegitimate manner? What makes them think this will change their ways?
Over at 9B Apparel in Huntington Park, the owner feels uncertain about SB 62. On the one hand, Art Rabar says he's in favor of increasing worker protections. In fact, it's in line with what most brands want these days.
You know, when brands come to me, they want to be socially responsible. That's what you hear. They want to see and feel where everything is made. The mindset has changed over the last 20, 30 years.
But Rabar also feels that the garment industry needs more support if it's going to be able to remain in California. He says workforce development and lower costs for things like insurance would help factories thrive in LA.
And then it'll be easier to even regulate when you have a bigger pool, you have more people in there, you have more eyes, you know, and it's not going to be as fragmented and it's not under the table as much, you know.
A proposed federal bill modeled after California's garment worker bill might address some of his concerns. In May, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand introduced the Fabric Act, which would implement the same wage theft protections as SB 62, but on a national scale. It also has money for workforce training, equipment, and health and safety improvements. It's currently in the Finance Committee. In the meantime, organizers are doubling down on their efforts to spread the word about SB 62 to workers and employers in LA. For Hilda Romero, for one, is excited to continue the fight.
Me gustaría que sigamos luchando o apoyando para que los patrones de verdad nos paguen a todas las personas por hora.
I would like us to continue fighting or supporting so that the bosses really pay all of us by the hour, she says, because people earning by the piece are suffering. They don't have enough money for groceries, rent, clothes.
Para la marqueta, para la renta, para un par de zapatos, para la ropa. O si tienen niños también. Entonces eso no es justo que...
In the coming months, the Garment Worker Center will be teaming up with the State Labor Commission to track down those manufacturers that are still paying by the piece. For KCRW, I'm Zoe Matthew.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Wage theft and the underpayment of wages doesn't just take place in the garment industry. It's an issue in many industries in LA and beyond. And the people who are most affected tend to be the most vulnerable, people with fewer resources and social standing to fight back, including many immigrants and people of color. Part of the problem is a lack of enforcement against bad actors. And when claims are made, they can take years to work through the system. Case in point, car wash businesses have a long history of wage theft in California. In 2019, California's labor commissioner fined Playa Vista Car Wash in Culver City $2.3 million for underpaying workers. 3 years later, workers still haven't received any of that back pay. That's according to an investigation by CalMatters, and the two journalists who worked on that investigation join me now, Alejandro Lasso and Lil Kalish. Hi, welcome to you both.
Hi.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Alejandro, I'm going to start with you. So what was happening at Playa Vista Car Wash? Why was it fined so much money?
I think it's worth noting that this was the largest fine that the state of California had ever issued against a car wash business. And that also it's probably worth noting that Playa Vista appealed this citation, disagreeing with many aspects of the state's investigation. And so that appeal process is ongoing. But the reason Playa Vista was fined so much, at least according to the state of California, was that the car wash workers who worked at the business were being forced to work and weren't being paid for that work. They were frequently required to take extended lunch breaks. They were also required to work up to 10 hours a day with no overtime pay, at least according to the state of California. And managers regularly altered workers' time cards to reduce total hours. And probably the most notable part of this story was that, you know, workers were being forced to work off the clock. They were asked to wait in an alley from the start of the day, and sometimes they were sent home entirely without being paid.
Right. Okay. So, Lil, if a decision was made against the company in 2019, the case must have been started much earlier. And as I said, the workers there still haven't seen any of that back pay. So how typical is it for the process to take such a long time?
Yeah, it's pretty typical for it to take years because, as Alejandro said, employers will often appeal or delay the hearing dates, and that will make the case drag on. Right now, we see that the average wage theft case takes almost a year to get a decision, and that can take even longer for workers to get the money back into their hands. In the Playa Vista instance, we saw that the first instance of wage theft was documented as far back as 2015. So it's been 6 years since it all began. And like we said, the Playa Vista owner refuted the charges in the claim and said that the state didn't interview enough workers to get a fair picture and that the car wash actually overpaid some of its staff. And so that process has just made the whole thing drag on for many years.
So Alejandro, you spoke with one of the workers at Playa Vista, a man named Antonio Dominguez. So what does he say about his experience working at car washes?
Absolutely. He has a lot to say. Antonio has been working in the car wash industry for more than two decades. He came to the United States from Mexico in the late 1990s. The first car wash he worked at, you know, a large sort of full service car wash in the greater Los Angeles area. He says he only got paid in tips the first 5 years that he worked there. He was only making about $15 a day, he said, which was, you know, really astounding. You mentioned at the top that many people in this position are immigrants and people of color, and that is Antonio. He told us he was initially happy to have a job, that it didn't occur to him how much he was being manipulated. And, you know, he also was sending money home to his family back in Mexico. So he felt that additional weight, that additional burden. But even when he started recognizing what was happening to him, he said he felt powerless, like a nobody here in the U.S.
Yo decía yo en este país no soy nadie, no tengo derechos. Tal vez si yo me acuso, tal vez si yo voy a alguna agencia, no me van a responder.
There, Dominguez is just saying, you know, that in this country that he feels like a nobody, that he doesn't have any rights, and that if he were to go to a state agency, that, you know, he feared he was saying that, you know, he feared nobody would even attend to him or listen to him.
Lil, you mentioned that the Playa Vista Car Wash is appealing the state's fine. What's it saying in its appeal?
Yeah, so the Playa Vista Car Wash kind of refuted the charges, and in their appeal, they said that the state didn't interview enough workers to get a fair picture. They interviewed, I think, 24 out of the 64 workers, and they did an independent audit that said that the car wash actually overpaid some of its staff. And so that's kind of how they've appealed the case and kind of delayed it further.
Hmm. And Lil, there's a law in California that car washes have to register with the state and pay $150,000 into a restitution fund for workers unless their workers are unionized. And you spoke with people from the Western Car Wash Association, which represents the car wash industry. Now, what did they say about the law and about this kind of wage theft?
Sure, that's right. Yeah, the car wash worker law, it says that car washes have to register and pay this $150,000 bond, which is set up as a restitution fund. And the Western Car Wash Association told me that the registered businesses aren't really the problem, since they're the one paying into the restitution fund, and they're actually paying the back wages for workers. And this is what we heard from Chris Buscaglia, who's the former board member of the Western Car Wash Association.
Most of the people getting caught are car washes that are unregistered. And so therein lies, again, the problem, where the good actors are paying for the bad actors.
So is that a fair concern, that the good actors are paying for the bad actors? And how many bad actors are there, do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to say how many bad actors there are out there, but with data from the Census and the Labor Commissioner, it shows us that less than 40% of the car washes were registered in the state in 2020. And so in some ways, I mean, what the Western Car Wash Association told me was that some car wash owners might cancel the bond after paying it, and that there's no mechanism in place with the Labor Commissioner's office or the state to kind of keep track of it. So there's really no mechanism to hold those folks accountable, despite all of the different iterations that the car wash worker law has undergone.
So Alejandro, I'm going to give you the last word. There is a good news ending to this story. Antonio Dominguez has started his own car washing business with a group of colleagues. Tell us more about that. How's it working out?
Yeah, that's right. So Antonio and some of the other workers have banded together to start a worker-owned car wash business. The money goes directly to the workers, these workers who basically have all of their equipment in a van. We caught up with them in July. They parked in front of the headquarters of the Clean Car Wash Worker Center. Clean played a pretty critical role in the Playa Vista car wash case. And, you know, we kind of watched them wash cars from various customers for the day.
Sounds nice. Alejandro Lasso and Lil Kalish report for CalMatters. Thanks so much to you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up, one animal rescue in Orange County is taking in more dogs and cats than before the pandemic, but they're doing it with far fewer resources. That's coming up right after this short break. Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Janaea Williams. Abandoned dogs or cats don't have a lot of options. There are shelters and rescues, of course, but both have limited space and resources to care for the many dogs and cats that get left behind in a move or whose owners can't house them anymore. But one organization down in the OC is trying to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Oh, baby, because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
The Animal Assistance League of Orange County is a no-kill shelter for pets. They dedicate their time to helping and educating people about better pet care, and they help lost or homeless pets find a forever home. They work on a shoestring budget, all for the sake of these dogs, cats, and rabbits, too. Colleen McCammon is the president of the Animal Assistance League of Orange County, or the AALOC, and she joins me now. Hey, Colleen.
Hello.
So how many dogs and cats do you have at the AALOC right now?
Currently, we have 78 cats, 2 dogs, 4 bunnies. We also have another 38 cats in foster care and 25 dogs in foster care. So we are close to a little over 150 animals currently.
Oh, wow. So I imagine it's very costly to care for and feed and walk and nurture these animals. So is it a struggle to stay afloat financially?
It's more than a struggle. After almost 50 years of helping animals in Orange County and beyond, we are now looking at how do we get through this next year without possibly closing our doors. That would be the most heartbreaking thing that could happen to animals. We are the organization that that veterinarians refer people to when they can't afford an emergency with their pet. We are the one that animal control sends people to who need help just doing spay and neuter, or for pet food, or for placement. We have done so much in Orange County for almost 50 years, and we are the largest, oldest no-kill organization. Besides our no-kill shelter, and I told you about our own animals, we have many of these community assistance programs that people depend on, especially low-income seniors, disabled, homeless owners, of which there are many more now. They need to have some place to come to so that they can take care of the basic needs for their pet, just pet food alone. There's emergencies all the time that we get called on because so many people are in a different financial place now than they ever thought they would be, maybe prior to the last 2 years in COVID. But it's all day long. We get thousands of calls per month, and we don't say no. But how do we keep saying yes when the last 2 years we haven't even been able to have a fundraiser because of COVID? So at a time when we are being asked to help more and more and more, we have less and less to give.
Right. So Colleen, what's your hope for the future of the AALOC?
My hope would be that more people would become aware of who we are and what we do. It seems that people know where to find us who need the help, but we need also the word to get out there to people who can support the organization through donations, considering leaving in your estate planning a charity of your choice. If you love animals, Animal Assistance League of Orange County is a wonderful choice. We have been here for 49 years. We struggle to keep this going. We struggle to help everybody who comes to us who needs help, even honestly, when we dig into our own pockets to make it happen. So my hope is just that people will become aware of the good work that this organization does so that it can continue for another 50 years. Animals are going to need us. And, you know, our logo, our motto says their welfare is in our hands. And it truly is. For a lot of these animals, they don't have anybody else.
I wish you good luck in getting the resources you need to take care of these dogs and cats. Colleen McCammon is the president of the Animal Assistance League of Orange County. Colleen, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
That's all we've got time for this evening. Tomorrow on the program, some small businesses in the Southland that depend on tourism dollars are feeling the pinch this summer. We'll check in with stores along the Venice Beach Boardwalk to see how business is recovering after the pandemic. That's tomorrow on Greater LA. And by the way, you can listen to this show and all our shows at any time at our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA. You can give us some feedback. You can even subscribe to the podcast, too, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Sue Margulies, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Jody Adler, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordal all had hands on today's episode. I'm Janaea Williams. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great evening.